Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Attorney Norm Pattison. You know, some folks were upset that that cop who kneeled on the George Floyd in the video only got third-degree murder. Can you explain that?
Well, I think I can. So taking another life falls within the class of crimes known as homicide, death of a human being. And in order to commit a homicide, you have to engage in unlawful activity, in this case, using the force that was used on Floyd. Whether kneeling constitutes that or not, the jury will determine. But you also have to do it with a certain mental state, a certain state of mind. And although all state laws differ, all grade the degree of homicide based on your mental state. So, for example, in Connecticut, and I believe in Minnesota, murder in the first degree or murder is the intentional, specifically intentionally, you're taking another person's life with specific intent. Your conscious objective has to be to kill. So I shoot a gun at your head. I can't say, gee, I was trying to swat a fly or, I thought you had a headache. You know, I mean, pointing a gun at a person's head is pretty good circumstantial evidence of having a specific intent to kill. Then there are various forms of manslaughter. One form of manslaughter is engaging in reckless behavior. That is being aware of an extreme and unjustifiable risk and proceeding nonetheless. A second form of manslaughter.
What do you mean? Give me an example of that. Is that like driving fast with a car full of people? You hit a tree.
Or driving drunk or something?
Yeah, absolutely. Or saying, watch this, guys. I'm going to go through the street light with my eyes closed and closing your eyes and going through the intersection and hitting someone. I mean, you got eyes to look. You got hands to steer. The intersection says, take care. You don't. You abandon your responsibility to behave in a way, and you know there's an unjustifiable risk of harm. You proceed and somebody acts or somebody gets killed. So that would be a more culpable form of manslaughter. A less culpable form of manslaughter, and I believe this is the crime that the officer was charged with, is a depraved indifference to human life. Acting in such a way that you demonstrate that you don't care whether the person lives or dies. And that is the less culpable form in these three ways. Connecticut grades homicides in this way as well. We call them slightly different things. This might be manslaughter in the second or a different form of manslaughter rather than murder third. But that's what's at stake in the charging decision. Now, it turns out that the prosecutor may have been shrewd because there, the autopsy of Mr. Floyd gives the defense a lot to work with. There's no evidence of strangulation, no evidence that he died because a knee was a quote unquote on his neck, making him unavailable to breathe. As some have pointed out, he breathed fine for the 4.5 minutes where he said, I can't breathe. What happened? If you look at the
I don't know who these people are who say that seriously,
yeah. Really.
I've seen listen to this. The taser industry has, for example, what's called the excited delirium syndrome, which they use as a defense when people are killed by a taser. Since Vic, and I think we even talked about this on the show years ago, since Victorian times, there have been classes of injuries where people get torqued up, their body goes into overdrive, and they're dead. And typically what you'll find is they had a pre-existing condition. They may have been intoxicated. They were under extreme provocation, and they die. I don't know whether this officer's lawyer will look at that as a potential defense. I'm not sure I would, but I was stunned when I saw that in the autopsy report. No question in my mind that the officer's use of force there was unjustified. Plenty of questions in my mind about how it caused Mr. Floyd's death. And I think the decision not to charge him with first-degree murder was shrewd. The prosecutor substitute the charges later and ask for more serious charges. I believe in Minnesota they have to submit the case to a grand jury. A grand jury might return an indictment for first-degree murder. But right now the officer picked the low-hanging fruit. He charged what he knew he had. And I think he did so because there was a response for prompt and quick action. A lot of people are saying you don't need to investigate. The video is the whole case. It says it all. Well, it says a lot, but it doesn't say it all from an investigative standpoint. There'll be other videos of what took place beforehand. There's also this highly suggestive evidence that the two men worked together for 17 years, is it?
Yeah.
As providing securities at some local establishment. That may provide an investigation evidence of intent. Maybe there was animus between the two of them and he was settling an old score.
Let's just say the investigation happens. Everything is by the book except for the knee to the neck. That's enough there, right?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, you know, if there's no evidence that the guy was struggling. I don't see how, you know. I think the knee should have come off the neck far earlier. I don't think, you know, there is in police training, people are told about and trained and warned against positional asphyxia. In other words, putting so much stress on a person's torso that their lungs and breathing apparatus can't work appropriately. It seems to me that that's a clear violation of the training policies, and it's going to support a finding of carelessness, negligence at a bare minimum.
But what you said, that he wasn't under duress. He was saying, I can't breathe.
Well, he wasn't resisting.
I'm not saying that. I've heard people say that. I mean, so, and you see the autopsy report and you hear the autopsy report where there's no sign of strangulation. I was stunned by that because as portrayed in the press, you know, his breathing, his airways are obstructed by the officer's knee. The autopsy may or may not support that, which it would be a stunning turn of events in terms of that death. But the video is deeply disturbing, and I think that undoubtedly Floyd would be alive but for the officer's conduct. So there's a homicide there. There may not have been a murder. There's probably a manslaughter. There's certainly negligent homicide. The details will matter, and that's what a trial is all about.
You know what really got me about the video?
What's that?
It's bad. It's really bad. But no one really talked about it, is that this guy knew he was being recorded and still left his knee on the guy's neck for 9 minutes. So you could be bad. You could be a bad person and do bad things. But when you're recorded, generally you start doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That,
to make it look
better.
Well,
and that'll be an important part of his defense.
Right.
That'll be an important part of his defense. The defense will say, look, you know, the airways weren't obstructed. People keep saying the knee is on the neck. I'm not sure I see it on the neck. I see it on the shoulder. I see it in the area of the neck. There's a difference between having a knee on a shoulder and a knee on a neck. If there's no evidence of trauma to the neck, I'll concede I haven't watched the video more than once or twice, and then not the entire thing. But, you know, if there's some question about whether the knee was on the neck and there's no evidence that he died as a result of suffocation, the case looks a little different. And, jeez, you know,
can you imagine what would happen there if he's not convicted of murder?
Yeah.
Well, he's not going to be convicted of murder. I doubt they'll be able to muster that evidence.
So manslaughter,
of homicide in some form. Yeah, I mean, we're Simi Valley, and we're O.J. Simpson in 93, 94, all over again. And then maybe there'll be a federal charge, you know, that the man will have to face as well. I mean, I think it's interesting that the country has erupted in response to this killing. You know, the statistics on police violence are that there are roughly 1,100 to 1,300 police-caused deaths every year in the United States. The majority of people who are killed are white people. However, as percentage of population, a black man is 2.5 times more likely than a person of color to be killed by the police. In the overwhelming majority of all of these cases, the individual who was killed was psychologically disturbed and the officer's force was justified. In a handful of cases that are now captured on video, they go viral. And instantaneously, in this case, the country erupts in flames. You kind of wonder whether this is how people are getting out, you know, whether this is a case of spring fever. I mean, we've all been locked up for months. We've been hearing now a steady drumbeat about how the coronavirus exposes the inequities in our society. So we get a man of color died. People erupt all of a sudden, and this is proof that the country is some sort of racist asshole that needs to be restructured by violence if necessary. I'm just not buying the narrative. I'm seeing a problem with policing. I'm seeing an officer who behaved at a minimum negligently, probably recklessly, but he probably isn't guilty of murder. He's been fired. He'll likely go to prison for some period. However, it'll be a hotly contested trial, and I don't think a conviction is a foregone conclusion. And if it's not, and then the claims are, well, wait a minute, you know, he wasn't convicted and we're sure he was murdered. You know, at what point does mob rule become a substitute for the orderly process of a courtroom? There will be a trial. There are serious and important questions there. The fact that a black person is 2.5 times more likely to be killed by an officer than a white person of similar age is an important question. I'm just not sure that it entitles people to the rage that they're experiencing, or that it's worth burning a city down for.
As far as I know, the three other officers that were present have not been charged with something yet. Should they?
So here's the law there.
Could they be?
Yeah. It's going to be difficult. Under the Federal Civil Rights Act, an officer has an affirmative, a civil act, an officer has what's called bystander liability, a duty to intervene. If we're all police officers and I see you engaging in unlawful conduct using unreasonable force, I have a duty, if I can, to stop you from doing something. These officers didn't, and
right.
And again, I don't think the force was justified. So they're civilly liable. But the mental state necessary for murder isn't there at all. There's no evidence that there was a conspiracy to go out and kill a particular individual or any man at all. And reckless conduct, maybe you could argue that one of the guys should have pushed them off.
They didn't stop anything.
You could argue that. And maybe when they submit it to a grand jury, a grand jury will see that. My impression was that the prosecutor there, rushed to get charges in. He picked the low-hanging fruit to just get something in the bank to, kind of try to calm people down. And that's a horrible reason to prosecute. We don't have the bread and circus phenomena in Connecticut or in the United States where we say to an aroused crowd, thumbs up or down, and then act based on that. Usually there are thorough investigations. There wasn't here, there will be, and I think people need to just calm down, take a deep breath, and see what the legal process produces.
All right. Norm, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Jazz and AJ News.
So the protests have come to Connecticut, and they seem to be everywhere. Yesterday it was Waterbury, New Haven, Bridgeport, Hartford, Stamford. Brian Foley is on. He's with the Department of Emergency something or another.
Yeah, long title, yeah.
Right.
Good morning, guys.
But
morning.
Your department oversees the state police. How did it go?
Well, what's the answer to that, Chaz? Good, bad? I don't.
Well,
how do I say?
To be honest with you.
No one got hurt.
Right.
Right? A couple of arrests in Waterbury by state police. There was other arrests not in Waterbury. They made a couple of arrests in Bridgeport by state police, and Waterbury made some arrests. But nothing got burned. No one got hurt. To this point, they've been largely peaceful. I have, as we talked last week, we had kind of brushed on this, and I had been working with a lot of the inner city groups around the state through last week and prior to, and then this weekend I touched base with as many people as I could. They're upset. And I can't say I blame them for many reasons, but watching the video that we touched upon last week with cops are upset. This is a stain, and there's really nothing to say that's going to assuage how pissed off some people are about it. And we just kind of gotta do the best we can to show that we care, that we're going to change, and that we're going to try to keep things peaceful.
What would change look like?
It's an overall long-term cultural change. And I get upset sometimes just kind of, the attitude police officers, myself included, I've seen it, I've experienced it, I've been a part of it, where you're in the locker room and you're joking about, how this guy, got lumped up because he, talk back, or he handled or was rude to the police officer. No one really wants to talk about the anger that's inside people that comes out. It's not like we all have anger in us, in little dark corners, and when does it come out? We all have some level of a mean streak, and when does it come out, and how do we change that culture, and how do we talk about it? There's so many layers to this, because you have police chiefs, I'm certain of this, at top levels all around the state, and the commissioner, who want to change things, who want to just change the culture of warrior to guardian in the police world. And that's pretty much, in a nutshell, probably the best way to put it. Now, there's a time for a warrior, and that was last week when we had a killer running around here. And the cops are very, very, very good at that. They've been good at that for 100 years. As we try to shift the paradigm of police work over to a guardian mentality. It's been a heavy lift over the last 25 years as I've been watching.
I think that that's where a lot of the anger comes from, is that it's a conversation. Something like this happens and we hear, oh, we got to make some changes, and then not a lot happens, and
same old,
and then it happens again, and it's like, here we go again.
Right.
This is about as bad as I've seen. I hate to say it. Just the 8 minutes plus of, you know, delivering death on video and people screaming, you know, hey, man, you know. Yeah, and what's it take for another cop to tap him on the shoulder and say, bro, you know,
you're
all in a deep, you know, just why don't you adjust your little stance there, partner?
Exactly.
That's all back, ease up. And that's hard to do, too. You know, and there's a culture, and I've said it before, and it's not their fault. It's how they were trained. But, you know, you're hanging around old-time cops. But back in our day, we would have split up. Back in our day, we would have used shotgun and birdshot to – I've seen this on social media. You know, we would have used this to quell the riots and dogs and fire hoses. And, you know, that mentality, you know, it breeds and keeps breeding and goes through generation and generation. And well, thanks, because of all that, we're kind of cleaning the mess up now, you know, because of all that brutality. And you know, cops that have been around 25 years in a city that have been on that long have seen plenty, and the ones on before that. And again, that's how those cops were trained. So I'm not necessarily faulting them. It's just been a carried over culture. And there's so much positive change going on. You watched the chief in New Haven did some of the stuff he did with his community and his police department over the weekend was amazing. The way they protested in Hartford, you know, you watched and you prayed that they weren't going to do anything, and they didn't. A lot of the people coming in they're coming into the cities and rabble rousing. Some of the media doesn't necessarily help, but I am not pointing fingers at you guys or anyone. You guys are always great. And I talked to a news director over the weekend, and she was adamant that they're going to do everything they can not to incite, and they have been responsible.
It's hard not to. I mean, especially when you look at not the local. I think the local has it right. The network.
Yep.
I mean, their dollars and cents are based on people tuning in, and you don't get people tuning in unless there's something like this happening.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'm just saying it serves them to, you know, keep doing it, keep showing the video.
That's why they do it,
all
yeah.
That. But, you know, there's clearly a problem here. You know what, Brian, when I watched that video, I thought two things, and no one really talked about it. Is one, this cop knew he was being recorded, right? And what happens when you know you're being recorded? You're usually on your best behavior.
Yeah, you back up.
So this is, like, if he does this when he's being recorded, what's his bad behavior?
Seriously.
And then the other thing I thought was, even though he was being recorded, knowingly being recorded, he thought no one would care, right? Like, no one in his department would say, you shouldn't have done that. Now you're going to suffer for it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he thought, this is okay.
Well, now we're all wearing that stain, and that sucks. And, you know, it's one guy, and I can tell you, I've never seen that level of anger or hate in a police officer in my 25 years in person, ever. And unfortunately now, you know, it seems like cops all everywhere act like that. And that's not clearly not the case. And you're seeing so many cops stand up right now and say, all right, you know, we don't want our jobs to be like this.
Right.
We don't want to go to work like this. And, and you know, what do we have to do?
You don't want to go to war against the people you were trained to protect.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you see, when you were watching that video, did you see George Floyd resisting or anything that would be considered resisting arrest?
Before I get upset, Chaz, I don't care what he was doing. The man was in handcuffs.
Right.
I don't care what he was doing.
Right.
If he's spitting, you can place your hand on his head. I didn't see that either.
Right.
I mean, that's an if, and it wasn't happening. I'm just saying in tactics-wise.
Yeah, yeah.
The dude was in handcuffs. There was two other guys on him with him that you can't see around the other side of the cruiser. I never, ever, ever got my I've had my ass handed. I've never had it done by somebody wearing handcuffs.
Right.
Ever. Never, ever, ever. Not even close.
That's
what's disturbing about it.
Yeah. The protests that we had over the weekend, when they were shutting down parts of highways 84 and Waterbury and 95 in New Haven, how did the state police respond to that, and how did you get the roads open again?
So they did a great, in my estimation, in my opinion, and I know I'm biased, I think they did an amazing job. There wasn't a single problem. Keep in mind that for all the differences in opinion, the governor did put Commissioner Ravella in this position, and he selected Colonel Malikas for just this time. And back in 2014, there was a protest in Hartford, an excessive force issue that was on video, and Commissioner Ravella marched with the protesters back then. Absolutely unheard of. The union had press conferences on how horrible it was. Unheard of back then. And he did it. And boy, did it calm things down. And I got to tell you what else. The community, as they were marching down Albany Avenue, UConn had busted a bunch of students. And they started yelling at the commissioner as he was walking, then police chief. And you know who straightened them out? Not the cops. Certainly not the cops. Bev Brown, Sam Saylor, snatched him up, straightened him out. This ain't your city. You know, and he's marching with us. And, you know, it's that kind of leadership that's in state now. And I'm so thankful that it is. And you know what? I hear the decisions being made behind the scenes yesterday and the day before on the highway. And it's peaceful. It's non-aggressive. You don't see them out there with their hats and batons. They're up on the highway. They're stopping traffic. And yes, obviously an inconvenience, but society the way that their judgment on how that is on their own, that's not our job. And the state police kept everything safe and calm. And I watched all the other police departments, the city police departments, do the exact same thing. And you know, it's kind of, you know, as an outsider looking in, it kind of looks like a, you know, just taking your medicine kind of thing right now. Everyone just be cool and let people vent because people need to vent.
How long have you been a police officer?
September of 1994.
Have you ever seen the images that we saw yesterday in Philadelphia, a convoy of police cars abandoned and burning?
No, I wasn't. There was riots in the 60s, which I'm told were very, very much similar. Obviously, Ferguson. We had some tensions in Hartford, the Aquan Salmon murder back in the 90s that were difficult. Shooting. And it was just, it was, I've never seen this. No.
Yeah.
You know, there's people are upset and there's just so much going on right now that police need to do everything they can to keep calm. And they are, as far as I can tell. You know, that's another thing is that the commissioner and the colonel do is you kind of watch nationally what's going on. That I'm telling you, they're watching every single play that's being made in different cities, different states, and trying to learn from mistakes.
All right, Brian Foley, thanks for coming on, brother. Appreciate it. We appreciate what you do.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Likewise. Later.
All right. Megan Friedman is a reporter with the New Haven Register, and she was at the protests in New Haven yesterday. What was it like?
Well, it was really unlike anything that I've ever been at before. I think the mayor's estimate put the crowd at 1,000 people. And, you know, there were moments that things felt tense. I mean, there was a lot of passion and energy, but the organizers worked really hard to tell people not to to proceed peacefully and not to use violence. I didn't see any violent incidents among protesters. The police did use pepper spray on some demonstrators in the evening after I had left, but it was a long day. We started up near the shops on Broadway in New Haven, and they marched down to the green and stopped briefly near City Hall.
It's not a very far walk from Broadway
to
the green.
No, it's not very far.
Right. Well,
it's like two blocks.
It was hot yesterday, too. So.
No. Yep. I'm just taking you through. So
yep,
it was,
I got you.
They marched to the green, to City Hall. And I just from what I'd heard, I thought that that was where it was going to stop. You know, my editor had said, you know, I suspect this to be a pretty quiet, brief march, and then you'll be home by 2 p.m. That did not happen. I was working till about 11. But,
wow.
So they
damn.
Went out. They went, yeah. Yeah, so I left the protest around 4:30, but they ended up going onto I-95, and they held the highway for about an hour. And
was that planned, or was that kind of spur of the moment, let's do this?
You know, I think it was spontaneous. So from what I understand is that whoever put out the flyer with the details of the event we're not sure who that was, and they didn't show up. And some organizers, some women from the Black Lives Matter New Haven chapter, they sort of took over, and they were organizing it on the fly. And I have to say, it was quite something to watch them figure things out as they went along. And after the highway, they ended up at the New Haven police station, and were there until I think about 11 p.m.
Wow. You being media, did you get any attitude from anybody?
No, it was something that, you know, I'd been nervous about, but generally, you know, the police didn't bother me. The protesters did not bother me. At one point, this was really embarrassing. I was trying to get over a guardrail, and I got kind of stuck, and
oops.
I was trying to get my colleagues' attention.
Nice.
It was okay.
How high was the guardrail?
Yeah, really. How short are your legs?
It was not that high. I am not nimble.
Gotcha.
but I was trying to get my colleagues' attention, and you know, so one of the demonstrators was help me out, and
oh, nice.
You know, tapped her on the shoulder. So yeah, and then you know, when folks were, because we were up on the median and people would keep an eye, one person offered to help make sure I was able to climb down okay. Yeah, so there were a couple of moments where, like, there were some protesters at the edge of the crowd that I saw walking to the police station, and they were white, and there was a white protester knocking down traffic cones, and another white protester confronted him and said, "Hey, knock that off. We don't want to get blamed for that." And it was, you know, it was a small thing, but he was pretty fired up. And
right.
I don't know. He seemed to be from, I don't know if he was from out of town or what the deal was there, but I do know that earlier in the day, our photographer, Pete Vizdak, who was there, had heard from an organizer that the organizers had told some folks who were trying to spray paint a pole on the highway to knock it off, that wasn't what they were there to do.
Right. Was it the same group in Waterbury that closed 84 that closed 95 in New Haven? Or was it two separate protests, or was the protest moving from city to city?
It was separate protests, so it was a totally different crowd of people who they gathered in New Haven at noon and made it to the highway and then later to the police station, and that all happened over the course of about 11 hours. I think a lot of folks trickled out by the end, but in terms of who organized it, I'm really not sure. We were hearing about what was going on in Waterbury, or bits and pieces. You know, things were happening pretty quickly as we were out with the marchers.
Did you, when you went over that guardrail, did you go up onto the highway with the protesters? And how did they stop traffic?
Yeah, so the progression to the highway was pretty slow. So we were on the Oak Street connector for a while, and I was trying to figure out what was happening. A couple organizers said we're going to Hartford, and they were kind of joking around.
Like, that's a long
that
walk.
Been quite really... a feat to walk from New Haven to Hartford.
Yeah,
it would have been
catch
all
a bus,
night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you could sort of see New Haven police were up ahead, near by the on-ramp, and I wasn't sure if they were going to try to stop the demonstrators. They did not, obviously. But I wasn't, you know, I was looking up ahead to see what was going on with traffic, because until pretty close to we got there, there were still cars going. But it was really, they stopped a lot on their way over. And it state police had, they ended up having both sides of the highway stopped, but it was 95 South that the protesters filled. And then there's a line of cars and trucks stopped on the northbound side. And a smaller group of demonstrators ended up at the front of them.
So it was the police that actually stopped the traffic?
Yes.
Huh. There you go, see?
All right.
It was police.
Protecting,
because that would be very dangerous.
Yes, it would.
For folks to just get out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Both
and
sides.
So you get the, so you're there all day, and then you got to write the story, right? So you're...
I left around, I want to say 4:30. I left the police station, and my colleagues, Claire Dignan and Pete Vizdak, stayed on for a while, and until around 6, I want to say 6 p.m., and then we're back, and, you know, we're on the phone working on the story, but stuff's still going down,
right?
And that's when we saw a video, I think from the Connecticut Bail Fund, of people trying to enter the police headquarters and getting pepper sprayed.
Yeah.
The mayor was inside the headquarters, and they wanted to talk to him. And he ended up coming out around 9:30 p.m.
Oh,
and
wow.
A colleague of mine actually went back. She went back to the station after like taking a really quick break at home. And I was writing, and she was feeding me what was going on. And that's when the mayor came out. And from what I just checked the story this morning, and it looks like they sort of trickled out after around 11, maybe an hour or so after the mayor left.
Right. Wow, that's a long day.
Yes, it is.
And a lot of protests.
A long day.
Right. Yeah. And the big guardrail. Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on and talking with us. Megan Freeman, New Haven Register reporter. We'll be looking for it on online. And you still print the paper part of it, too, right?
Yeah, I would check out the front page. I just took a look, and it looks really good. And the front page story in print is more about the protest. The online version has a lot more added material about what's going on locally with the mayor and activists in New Haven.
Great.
So
we'll link up at WPLR.com and 959thefox.com. Thanks for coming on. Nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Senator Blumenthal is going to hold for a few minutes because we just got a phone call from New Haven Mayor Elicker. The George Floyd protests came to Connecticut and to New Haven yesterday. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. So how did it go in New Haven yesterday?
Overall, we had zero arrests and no violence. There were around 1,000 to 2,000 protesters who very understandably were angry about what happened with George Floyd, that closed down the highway for a while and then came to the police station.
Were you at the police station when they arrived at the police station?
I was.
And so what were you doing at the police station? Did you know that they were going to go there?
We weren't sure where they were going to go. In the end, when they came to the police station, they were outside the police station for quite some time, I think until around midnight last night.
Yeah.
11 p.m. last night. And one of the things they wanted to do was to speak with me. Many of the same protesters came to my home on Friday night, and I went outside on my front lawn and tried to speak to the protesters, and they would not let me speak and drown me out. And so I went back inside, and they stayed at my home until about 1 p.m.
Wow, man.
Sorry.
So
So yes. in the end last night, I went out to speak with them, and they, you know, I tried to speak a number of times, and they kind of drowned me out.
That's weird. They want to hear from you, but then when you talk, they don't want to hear from you.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's
contradictive.
Let me ask you. So that has to be just from a personal standpoint, having protesters show up outside your house has to be a little unnerving when you have a family. And then when you start watching what's happening in Philadelphia and how these things can go south quickly, was that why you were at the police station yesterday?
No, I wasn't at the police station because I was afraid. I walked out and spoke with the protesters directly with nobody near me on Friday. I know a number of the protesters, and New Haven has a history of a lot of protests and voicing our concerns and anger at times. And I'm confident that at least as long as there are New Haven residents that are protesting, and some of these protests you've seen outside, folks come into town, that we'll have peaceful protests. And I just want to say that I understand people are furious. I feel really angry about the video and about incidents of police brutality around the nation. I'm hoping that we can have some really productive dialogue around it.
What dialogue would that be?
Well, I think that we need to talk more deeply about racism and how we can prevent those types of incidents from happening again. Now that we have cell phones, people are seeing these incidents firsthand that previously wouldn't have been captured, and the officers would have just been let off. And so there's a heightened awareness that these incidents happen, and we've got to do more to address them. I think that it's important for us to touch on income inequality and the serious challenges that are faced around the nation and in New Haven with people really struggling economically. And, black and brown communities are disproportionately impacted by that. And I think we need to have more conversations around that.
New Haven Mayor Elker is on the phone. If you had an opportunity to speak and be heard yesterday, was there anything important that you wanted to say to the crowd, but you didn't get a chance to because they were shouting over you?
I think the main thing is that I understand people's anger. And this conversation needs to happen, not just in one moment, but over a long period of time. And I hope that New Haven residents and people around the area are listening to the and trying to think deeply about these issues. But we've got to have a productive dialogue where we all listen to each other and all communicate. And I think there'll be time for that. There'll be time for that in the coming days and the coming weeks and months.
We have some audio that we grabbed from Twitter. This is you attempting to speak to the protesters last night outside the police department.
Apologize for that tweet before you start speaking.
Let him speak.
That's the death of George Floyd. And I hear your anger too. We deeply care about addressing inequality.
What a blunt.
Addressing police brutality.
Then why I got badges for shields on?
About that.
Y'all not
I am open to having a dialogue. I'm open to listening. I'm open to working with you in a collaborative way to address systemic racism.
Turn around and tell them to take off that riot gear.
But we have to do this.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
But it's
yeah, it
good.
Was a very tense moment.
Yeah. Yeah. But you did it. You went out there and tried to communicate.
Yeah. And, to be honest, I debated it. A lot of the day on whether it was the right thing to do because the protesters were saying F the police, F abolish the police, F the mayor, F the police chief. And the conversation on Friday was not obviously very productive at my house. And it's hard to know whether to when people say those things, I don't endorse those things.
Right.
I think that the problems that people are concerned about are very important, and I agree we have to address them. But, you know, in the end, I wanted to try to de-escalate the situation and give it another shot. I always want to listen to people as much as I can.
So some folks were pepper sprayed. Was that before you spoke or after?
That was before I spoke. They tried to enter the police station, yeah. and someone threw a water bottle or something.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mayor, it was tough, but, you know, for the most part, when you look at what happened in Philadelphia, I mean, we had some productive protests. So thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you, as always.
You know, here's the other thing that we haven't been talking about all day today is that there's a lot of things opening up in Connecticut.
Yep.
Casinos, mm-hmm. Beardsley Zoo, and hair salons and barbershops.
Ta-da.
Which is very exciting.
Some scruffy folks out there.
Yeah.
And really bad homemade haircuts.
Yeah. Well,
they got to fix that.
That changes. Jess Sassou, owner of Jessica's Color Room Salon in Middletown.
Sassou.
You open today?
Hi, guys. Yes, we are opening today.
Normally, you're closed on Mondays.
We are not. We actually are open on Mondays.
Oh, see? Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. How come they're always open Mondays?
One of the few salons.
And then I'm guessing you have a very full schedule?
Yes, very full schedule. But half our capacity, only half of our stylists are on. But we are fully booked for sure.
And have you had any stylists who don't want to come back because they're making more on unemployment?
Honestly, yes. Yeah. Yes, that's definitely a challenge.
Right.
Because they're getting what? Like whatever they would get for unemployment, which is a fraction of your normal salary, but then $600 a week.
Correct.
Right. So some folks would be like, why would I come in and cut hair?
Exactly. Sit here for that.
And wear a mask and have to clean in between.
I'll just cut my own hair.
Stuff when I could just stay home and make the money.
Right. Clip nose hairs.
So how do you handle something like that?
Well, I gave them the choice. And, you know, the ones that want to come back, I'm going to be very good to. And the ones that don't want to come back, it's their choice.
Gotcha.
Right. There's nothing else you could do. But you have to, based on conversations we've had here, you have to report them to the Labor Department, right? That they've been asked to come back and they won't come back.
Yeah. So, you know, I told them I'm offering your job back. And if you choose not to, that's your choice. But I will do what I have to do to the Labor Department. Yeah.
Right. You have to look, you have to run your business. You have a business. And if the state says this is what you have to do it or you lose your license.
Gotta be a boss.
Right.
That is what it is.
Not easy.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. How far out are you booked for haircuts and stuff?
We're fully booked at our full capacity for about a month.
A month?
I bet you a lot of dye jobs, yeah. Right?
Right. Mostly hair color?
Yep.
Yes, mostly hair color.
And you're still not blow drying, right? There was this can't. It was a whole thing.
No, you can.
You can.
But I don't think she is.
Well, we chose not to because when the governor said we couldn't, we altered every single appointment and told them that we couldn't blow dry. And then just like that, he lifted it. And we didn't have the time because we have to have 15 minutes after every single client to sanitize that we chose to just not blow dry and take that time to sanitize right now.
Yeah, just sit in front of this fan over here. Boom, done.
Yeah, right. Here, we're going to put you two in the back of this car.
Right, exactly.
And the top
and drive
is
around the block.
We're going to spin dry you. Just stick your head out of the sunroof.
Yeah.
Not too far up.
People don't mind. And, you know, I just tell them that the stylists have a mask and a shield on. I'm very concerned for the stylists working all day like that, too, and blow drying. So there's so many people that want to get in. They don't even care if we blow dry.
Isn't that wild that it was no blow drying and then some people made some noise and was like, okay, we can blow dry. But wait, is that based on science?
No.
Is there new science?
I still want answers.
Or you just didn't want to hear it. Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
Yep.
And are your prices the same or are you charging a little bit more because of the amount of cleaning and prep you have to do?
We chose not to go up on our prices. I felt by not blow drying that was helpful to have the time to sanitize. So we chose not to go up on our prices.
And then when you're booking, do you hold the spot specifically for previous clients or are you taking new people?
We did take all the people that were booked before we closed, and we took them first. So we do have very limited time, if any time at all, for new guests.
They're pretty shaggy.
And now you're booked a month out. Is that because that's as far as you want to go at this point, or you're just going to keep? Go ahead.
No, we'll keep booking, but we are booked solid, I would say, for a month.
Wow.
Yeah, the further you get out, the more you have to think. In 6 weeks, will this person still want to come in?
Right, you would think. Right.
Like, everything's changing so rapidly.
Yeah.
Yeah, some bad hair.
It's a common practice that we do anyway.
And what about the supplies? Are you able to get cleaning supplies and hair color? Is that a problem?
So I definitely had a fear, and I definitely prepared myself from the day we closed. I just kept buying hair color. It did take a really long time to come in.
The squirrel method.
So, yeah. Yeah, and cleaning supplies. So right, I was on top of it. I have plenty of cleaning supplies, color, face shields, and masks, just because from the moment we closed, I just kept buying it.
So you thought ahead.
Good for you.
See? She's smart.
That is smart.
Smart.
Well, thank you.
All right, we're going to, well, good luck today. What time do you open?
Thank you. Thank you so much. We are open at 11 o'clock, but my team is coming in at 10 o'clock, so we could prepare and see each other. We're really excited.
Cool. Oh, that's great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Reunion. From a distance, of course, yes.
All right, so we'll check back in next week, see how things are going.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right. Jess Sasu.
Sasu.
Thank you.
Happy cutting.
Color Room Salon in Middletown. Opening today.
Here we go.
Want to get away?
I want to get away.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. What are we doing for vacation this year?
Seriously.
What do we do?
Right.
What do you do? What do you do with the kids?
You
can't stuck with them.
Can't visit the yard again. Damn it, been there all day.
Right.
All year.
Let's bring on a professional. Amanda Klimak, President Largate Travel. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Give us a couple of cheap ideas.
Well, you know, this year is a little different than any other year we've ever experienced, and it is the year of the Clark Griswold getaway. So road trips are everything this year.
Right.
And that's what we're working on, a lot of road trips.
Well, it makes sense. You're in your own little vehicle and everything. You have to, like, you know, go to an airport and have your temperature taken
People,
and yada, yada.
People don't want to fly, right?
Right.
For the most part, people are still a little leery of flying, and I don't blame them. So we're kind of working with them to build vacations that meet their needs, allow them to social distance, allow them activities, but we're pre-planning everything so they don't have to think about it. And that's the biggest thing this year is you want to be prepared when you're ready to go away. So whether you're driving, taking an RV, if you're willing to fly, there's some great deals out there. But again, things are changing and opening up different paces.
Disney announced July 11th their opening. Have you had any interest from your clients?
Not much yet. I mean, we're still semi in lockdown here in New England. So, you know, here in New England, it's a little bit different for us and it's a little bit slower. But now that they have opened up, I think a lot of clients are waiting to see how it goes.
Yeah.
And then we'll start booking that. So people are kind of waiting and seeing what's going on rather than planning for the summer so far. But the road trips going to, you know, upstate New York and south are really popular.
All right. So let's talk about upstate. Where do you go if you're going upstate?
Well, as it be, tomorrow I am leaving for the first time ever in an RV to kind of see how this goes. And I am not an RV kind of gal. So
are you driving it?
Be really interesting. We are. And my husband and I are a little bit terrified because it's 33 feet long.
Right.
But what's cool about it is you don't have to stay in campgrounds. You can stay on vineyards and at, you know, distilleries and
or a parking
on
lot
farms.
Too. Yeah.
You can.
You got to plug in.
Yeah, you got to plug in. So, you know, we have a whole itinerary planned, which allows us to social distance, allows us to go to the wineries up in upstate New York. Certainly, you can't go in and sit down, but you can certainly take it outside and have a really nice experience still.
Oh, that's cool. So if I called you, you could connect me with an RV and then book out the tour?
Yeah, so we actually can do it all for clients. So clients hire us to be their, like, research team. And so my team of 140 people will research every activity, everything you could possibly do, plan your itinerary. Depending on how much you want to spend, we do everything from private rentals all the way up to luxury massive RVs with a driver.
So you know,
so
with a driver.
This sounds fantastic.
Have you seen
with
some of these RVs?
With a driver.
Have you seen some of these RVs? I mean, they open up wide. Some have like a second story. Like, it costs like $1.2 million, these things.
Amazing. And the cool part is the driver literally goes with you, parks it, sets it up, gets it hooked up, and then they take an Uber to a local hotel. So they're
they
not
leave you alone.
You
well, yeah,
time.
You want them hanging out.
He drove you
totally,
there.
Yeah, but totally.
So the driver has a mask on.
Yeah.
So the driver, you take a temperature before you get in, and the driver wears a mask, right?
Or is that absolutely. So safety is everything. Yep. You know, that's
so
the big thing.
With the RV, there's not a disconnect between, it's not like a limo where you could put the glass up between the driver compartment and the back where the passengers are, right? It's all kind of open.
It's just take flow. Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the RV itself. But for the most part, people are okay kind of renting and trying it themselves. But again, there is risk with it, you know, because it is a private rental most of the time. So we work with the clients to talk to them about what are the risks, what do you have to expect, you know, how do you do all these hookups and things like that. We help them get instruction guides and really prepare themselves for the journey, because that's what it's all about. The more prepared you are, the better your journey is going to be.
How long is your, what did you say, 30-something feet, your RV?
33.
Okay. 33 feet. It's
feet.
A Winnebago.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And then your husband's going to be driving this?
Well, both of us. So I've driven a truck with a trailer before, so I'm hopeful on this.
Oh, all right.
Shifts.
That's good.
It's kind of taking shifts. Yeah.
It should be easier, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to, the first night we're at a farm, the second night we're at a winery, then we're going to do 3 nights at a campground, which there's an adult-only section, which is rocking for me, and then we're going to have, you know, go hiking. We rented a car while we're at the campground, so we don't have to pull this sucker out and try to park it.
Nice.
And be able to really do the journey and test it out to see what it's like for clients.
I got to be honest, this sounds fantastic.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I'm really hopeful, and I am not somebody who stays in an RV or
Ashley
a camper.
Would not be able
I'm not
to drive an RV.
No.
Oh, absolutely not.
She had a hard time with a Volkswagen.
No. So when Ashley says it sounds fantastic, it sounds fantastic if someone else is driving.
Exactly.
Yeah, Eric can drive.
She's just hanging out drinking in the back of the RV.
Well, so you can rent any size RV. That's the cool part. You can go from a pop-up camper to a little tiny one all the way up to the massive big rigs. So you can do everything in between.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Right.
Are they available now, or are they gone?
No, they're available still. And what's really cool about it with this type of journey is that, so originally I was going to Vermont because we wanted to go to all the breweries up there. But the problem is that Vermont still has a 14-day quarantine for non-residents. So we actually had to pivot our whole itinerary and move it to upstate New York. And that's what's kind of cool about these types of trips and the road trip in general. Based on what states are doing, you can change your trip very quickly. And our advisors do everything behind the scenes for the client. So you don't have to worry about it. We do it all.
Travel agent Amanda is on from Largate Travel with some cheap summer vacation ideas. We've been talking about the RV and traveling to different spots and breweries and whatnot. Ashley had questions about the toilets.
Yeah.
What about them?
So every RV comes with a functional, like, restroom, right? And then if it's a trailer, if it's a big trailer that you're pulling with a pickup truck, how do you make that restroom functional? Because there are all kinds of hookups, right?
Yeah, so what we do, and we try to kind of break up your journey. So, like, my
hold on. I can answer this for Ashley. I'm sorry, Amanda. Ashley, you would say, Eric, take care of the bathroom.
Exactly, right?
Okay. Right. That's what you would do.
Or
why would you ask a question? You're going to listen to the answer.
Well,
you'd be like, I'm going to have Eric do all that.
Basically,
I would. I just want to know how complicated it is.
Your bathroom basically is a toilet paper and a shovel.
Eric can handle it.
Okay.
Right, so you got to dump the tank.
Do,
right?
Yes. So you want to break up your journey. So maybe the first night you'll stay on a vineyard. My husband and I are doing a farm, a vineyard. Then we're staying in a campground for 3 nights that has a full hookup, you know, can do the bathroom. But we're going to rent a car while we're at the campground so we don't have to pull it out once we park it, right? So then we can go do the Finger Lake region. We could go to wineries and breweries and hike and do all sorts of social distancing activities. And then come back at night, have the full hookup, not have to worry about it.
This is why I would hire a travel agent.
This sounds great.
I wouldn't want to have to go through all the different places.
Yep.
Right.
The course.
Help
and
me.
Stopping. And then, like, you figured out, let's go here a couple days here. And then we're going to stop at a campground where we could dump the tank.
Absolutely.
Right. All of this work is done for you.
Just dump while you're driving.
Right. Yeah, and what's cool is we actually learn about the people, figure out what they like to do. So my husband and I are doing breweries, we're hiking, we're going to go antiquing a little bit for the places that are open. But my team calls ahead, finds out what's open, the restaurants, where you can eat, where you can park. So we do all of that for the clients. They don't have to worry about it.
But does that cost more to have a professional do it than if I did it myself?
Well, I mean, we charge a planning fee to do it. So usually it's between $250 and $500, but we do all the work for you.
You just get
it.
So
it's like that kind of takes the stress off of you. You don't have to worry.
What's it? What's a general range to rent an RV for a week? Like not a 33 footer, like something a little bit smaller.
Yeah. So, I mean, they range from $100 a day to, you know, $300 a day, depending on what you're getting. You can rent everything from pop-ups to huge RVs. So you don't have to go big. You could do those Sprinter vans that are like a van, but it kind of converts into a living space and everything like that. But there's other things people are doing. If they don't want to do the RV thing, we do glamping, which is huge this year.
Glamping.
Where you can sleep in teepees, luxury tents, all sorts of things that are nice. They're inexpensive, but it's outdoors, but a little bit more cushy, you know?
What?
AJ's making a stinky face.
AJ's making a face. You're not a tent person?
No, I'll do the RV thing. Thank you. Yeah. I suck at camping. Every time I went camping was disastrous. And
how many times did you go camping? What do you mean every time?
I went a lot of times when I was a teen.
Because
friends want to go.
I don't believe it.
Because friends want to go. I actually had friends, Jazz.
Camping's fun.
I know you did. You're very friendly.
Yes, and they want to go camping, and it sucked.
Oh, okay.
It always rains.
If you're at a big campground and there's thousands of people, that's
it's great.
Different.
Yes.
And if you're staying
it is great
because
they're the best people. You meet all kinds of cool people.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The campfire at night, it's the best. There's always some water around somewhere.
Mosquitoes.
Whether it be a lake or a nice stream or something. It's great. What else? Let's just say you're AJ and you hate camping. What else can you do cheapo, modo, without getting on an airplane?
Well, there's tons of places. I mean, hotels and resorts around New England are really giving great pricing. But the thing is, you have to know what's open and what you're able to go to right now, because some states are still closed or require a 14-day quarantine before you could travel there. So there's a lot of research that has to take place in order to prepare to go. But there's some great driving destinations from here. I mean, if you want to go south, you know, doing West Virginia and Virginia, great areas, tons of outdoor activities, hiking and biking, so you can social distance. You don't have to worry about being around tons of people, but there's lots of activities.
What about a cabin on the lake?
Oh, that sounds nice.
Oh,
see, cabin on the lake.
Amazing.
I'm down with that big time.
Cabin on a lake. AJ, you're in.
Yep.
Absolutely. And, you know, once the northern states, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont start to open up, we'll be able to offer lots of those types of experiences. Right now, upstate New York is where it's at for people here. You can get there 3-4 hours, a little bit longer in some regions, but offers tons of outdoor activities. The skate parks are starting to open, but you just have to really plan ahead because you don't want to go hoping everything's going to be open and then get there and be disappointed.
That's what about Block Island? I saw Springhouse just sent out an email today that they're open.
Well, here we go.
Is that something you would recommend?
Well,
again, you have to be aware of what you're going into. So Block Island is an amazing destination, but if you get there expecting everything to be open and it's not, then you're going to be disappointed. So it's all about the preparation
research
and knowing what you're going to first. Yep, the research is everything. And you can either do it yourself, which does take time, or you could pay us to do it for you. So it's really, you know, it depends on what people are looking for, but certainly knowing where you're going, knowing what you're going to experience when you get there, where you're going to eat, how you prepare is really important. And then having that plan that if it rains, then what, right?
Right.
If you're stuck inside, there's no activities that are available, what's going to happen? So my husband and I, we're actually planning board games and all sorts of things. So we're prepared that
that's
if we're
awesome.
Stuck inside,
boring.
We have
yep.
stuff to do.
Board games are the best. Yeah. Glass of wine.
The word
campfire,
board is in the game.
The
word board.
Have a dance party.
Board.
Put on some tunes.
Board.
Do lip syncing.
As a board game.
Board game. Yes.
You can't tell me Twister's not fun.
Okay,
oh, come
maybe
on,
when
a little
you're
beer.
It's a good way to get hurt. Yeah.
So
look, Grandma snapped
I
a hip.
Say, you know. Yeah, but it's all in the preparation, and that's what we do.
You know what? You're right.
Prepare our clients so that they're ready to go.
Jennifer and I will go somewhere, and if we don't have a group with us that has planned out everything,
yeah,
we're like, what do you want to do today? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What do you
let's go
do?
Get something to eat.
Yeah.
And then, like, all right, what do you want to do now? I don't know. Hey, let's go snorkeling. All right, it's all booked.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on a boat. It's all booked.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? Let's go get something to eat.
Right. Exactly. Right. Then we'll
you
land
gotta,
the sun.
You got to have it planned out.
Jazz and AJ News.
99.1 PLR 95.9, the Fox George Floyd protests came to Connecticut, Waterbury, New Haven, Bridgeport, Hartford, Norwalk, Stamford. In Stamford, we saw a very inspirational moment where the police chief kneeled with the protesters, and on the phone now is Stamford Police Chief Tim Shaw. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for what you do. And tell us about that moment. How did that come about?
You know, we had a pretty good, it was a large crowd, a peaceful rally. They were doing a really nice job of keeping that in check. There was not too many people that were outside of it that were agitating the situation, and we were just there to support them. We kind of were staying back, and then there was some discussion with some of the organizers, if I would say a few words, and after a few words, they mentioned the next step in their program was that they were going to kneel for 8+ minutes, and they invited me to kneel, and, you know, in this time, I felt it was the right thing to do. You know, and I think, you know, we're all in these uncharted waters. So if this was an opportunity to try to bring people closer together, I'm glad that we had that opportunity.
No, it's a real special thing.
Yeah.
I think it says a lot about you and your police department if the protesters invited you to speak and to kneel.
Yeah. Again, it was it felt spontaneous. They were doing their own thing. We were staying away from them, giving the space that they needed. As you know, right now, the climate, everyone's very angry, rightfully so. You know, we're angry too. So, you know, they brought us a little closer into it. And when that opportunity presented itself, it was, you know, I'm glad they gave us that opportunity.
You have an interesting history, right?
Are you going to talk about my East Haven graduation, or are we going to go with law enforcement?
I don't know.
Both?
What do you think?
You were a Stamford police detective, and you decided to go to Easton and take the job there as chief to go somewhere quiet. And the first week you took the job, you had that case as probably the biggest case in Easton I can remember, where the kid killed his parents. And then you were nominated for the chief job in Stamford, and you take that job, and then coronavirus strikes.
Yeah, I'm not sure if people are calling me a black cloud, a mush. I'm not sure.
You've been mushed.
It's not your fault.
You've been mushed.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just,
right. Don't put on the horses.
But yeah, it's been an interesting career path. I did about 27 years in Stamford.
Wow.
A lot of different work in narcotics, and rose to assistant chief, and then had that opportunity to be closer to home when both my kids were really at the end of their high school and starting college. So it benefited my family tremendously, and then fast forward, you know, almost 5 years later, and Stanford, that opportunity was there, and it was, it's, I knew it would be nice to come home.
How did that go? Did they call you, or you called them? How does that work?
Stanford was a dynamic hiring. There was a lot of issues prior to me being involved, and that'd be something if you did a little Google search, you'd see it. So there wasn't a chief for about 6 months,
ooh,
and then they reached out, thought about it a little bit more with the family, and now my wife and I were empty nesters, and said this might be a good time. I think she wanted me out.
There you go. See,
that's it. That's a it happens a lot.
Those shorts from the house you're wearing.
Look what happened to Coach Calhoun.
Yep.
He retired a couple years later. He's
yep.
back.
Exactly.
Why do you think that happened?
Right. Yep. Yeah, because it became annoying.
Yeah, no, it's probably more on my fault, though.
Yeah, well, we appreciate what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
And how you're doing it.
Well, no, much appreciated. Thanks for a few minutes. I heard Brian Foley before on your show, and you know, I think it's important for people to realize that, you know, we're as angry as everybody else. And, you know, we're looking to make things better together.
I think his quote of the morning was, we are now all wearing that stain.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the internal discussions we're all having. You know, we're making sure everyone sees that video so they know how disgusting it is. And they know that it's nothing that we'll tolerate here. And if, you know, I already know the answer, but if somebody has a different idea, then they shouldn't have. They definitely won't wear the patch of Stanford for very long. So
there you go.
Yeah.
We're addressing that situation. I think every chief in Connecticut is, but you know, there's a lot of good training here, and we just got to get better. We got to just open our doors and let people vent.
Well, Chief, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it, and we appreciate what you did over the weekend and what you're doing for Stanford.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks for a few minutes.
Thank you.
Stanford Police Chief Tim Shaw. Did you see that the Amish were out protesting?
The Amish were protesting.
The Amish.
How'd they know the protest was going on?
Bingo.
Right.
Because
exactly.
They don't have TVs or phones or social media, right?
Someone told them, apparently.
Bingo.
You know?
Are they even allowed to get a newspaper?
I don't know. Yeah, the newspapers are going to
have. Two cans and a string?
Right. Now, you know, do they ride their little wagon with the orange triangle in the back?
Well, that's a good question. Do they have newspapers? Did they have newspapers back then?
I think they can
whenever time period they're living in.
I think newspapers are going to have this because newspapers have been around for many, many years.
Well, there's some kind of a rule or belief with them, I think, about outside contact.
Right.
So I don't know if that's allowed or not.
Maybe they have the Amish Gazette. Maybe they have their own newspaper.
But
right.
They still
well,
have
how
to
would
know
they
what's
find
happening?
That out?
Right. Well, they have their Amish reporters,
they
of course.
They have nothing to report on.
This is Yoder.
Community.
This is Yoder. I'm here on the scene of the thing, you know? Yeah. But he has to like.
His name is Yoder?
His name is Yoder, yeah. Everybody, they're all named Yoder.
All right. So they do go out
right, Zeke
into
Yoder.
The community, and
they
they'll
do.
Be with a horse-drawn carriage.
Yeah, they sell their wood. They sell their products.
Their barns.
The barns and also those fireplaces.
Right. So they must have, someone went out.
Heard of
said,
it.
Said, what is going on?
Right, came running back.
What happened?
The horse came running back.
Right, actually, what's that? I can't do it fast.
Come on, you can do it. Fast horse.
That's a helicopter.
Hold on. Let's hear it again. All right. It's running on grass.
It was wearing sneakers. Yeah.
It's running on
okay.
grass.
Yeah. It's a horse wearing sneakers.
Yeah. It was wearing flip-flops.
Running fast.
Clip,
okay.
Clop, flip-flop. Good. Okay. Clip, clop, flip-flop. I love that. Oh, anyway, yeah.
Clip, clop, flip-flop.
We're running back to the Amish Gazette. And
right.
Said,
then
you know,
how does that go?
And
what
said,
happened?
And then stop the press, which is easy because the guy's cranking. He just let go of the damn thing. Okay.
They have a metal. I guess they have a metal.
They probably have like a crank press.
Right.
Like the old type, like Gutenberg had back in the day.
Yeah.
And they probably like, you know, then they arranged all the letters like with the thing. And then they ran it a couple thousand times, you know. It's like, luckily right. There's only like 25 people who like read the paper over there.
Yeah.
So they did. Each one got a copy.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, they reported on it.
Right. But you know, they have to let the paper dry. So there's this whole time. Like,
yeah.
You have to stop the press. Then you have to, like you said, organize
right.
the letters.
Exactly.
This
right.
all takes time.
Right.
And then you spin out a few copies.
Right, exactly.
They have to dry.
Then you got
to
put them together.
And then you put them together.
Right.
And then
you
hand
them out. Right.
Right. And
yep.
then everybody says,
but then the
oh.
news is over.
But then while the ink
yeah,
is
right.
drying.
Wouldn't they be like, they should be out there like today.
Right. Well, the ink is drying. Like, the ink is drying. You're building another barn. So they're multitasking constantly.
No, but they would be late. How were they out there over the weekend? How did they know?
So some,
it came to them in a dream.
According to Wikipedia, some forms of technology can be permissible sort of community to community. So it's not just blanket, every Amish person believes this.
Right.
But the key to their way of life, according to what I'm reading, is that working hard is considered godly.
Yeah.
So using something like a chainsaw would never be allowed.
No.
Because chopping down the tree by yourself is considered the most important work you can do.
And when they eat rice, they use by their fingers. Takes a while.
That would take a long time.
It would take a long time. When you want 2,000 or something, yeah. I mean, eat one bowl of rice, like, okay, see you Thursday.
You can use a spoon.
And the men always
can you have a TV?
And the men have haircuts like Ashley. They have bangs.
Thanks, Ashley.
What did I do to you?
They got the Dutch boy painter's
look. It doesn't go all the way around. They don't get the like a whole bowl.
No, Ashley, if you put on one of those dresses... You would be. He's right on the money with that one.
I don't think so.
I love your haircut, but you could put on a dress and people would, if you were in Pennsylvania, you'd be like, right. Oh.
The women are long hair, but the men all have the Mo Howard look.
Yeah.
The Mo Howard look, yes. The straight, yep.
Here's the one thing about them, though. They had the best signs, right?
They do.
They have the best bagels, also.
No, the best protest signs.
The Amish have bagels?
Yes.
What the hell? That's Jewish food.
Listen, I lived in Philly.
They make
pretzels.
The best
bagel place was the Amish place. I'm telling you.
Okay. Was it really Amish?
Yeah.
No. Or did you screw that one up?
No.
Yes. Do you know how to spell Jewish?
I think
chance?
It was a Jewish guy and you thought he was Amish.
Right.
No. It's in the Reading Terminal Market. Somebody help me out who's been there.
No one's going to help you.
Yeah. No one else.
Come on.
No one else ate the brown acid that day.
Phoning a friend.
Yeah.
No, it's a Jewish guy.
No,
yeah.
It's
and
not.
She was like, oh,
just
have yeah,
him have
a haircut
like
that. Making bagels.
Yeah.
No, he makes the best bagels.
Oh, my God. They're so good. I love their locks.
No, but don't you think the Amish protesters? I'm not making light of what happened
no,
over the
course
weekend.
Not.
It was important and
yeah,
it was
no.
dramatic.
It
but
shows solidarity.
Don't you think that they would have the best signs?
Yes, because the craftsmanship is second to none.
Stuck in the nun.
Stuck in the nun.
I'm going to stick you with a freaking knife in a second and knock it off.
Oh, look, your mom's on.
What?
Your mom's on the phone.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Ma?
Hey, Ma.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Mom.
Hi.
Mom, Phil's picking on me.
He just tried to stab me.
What a narc.
She's in Florida.
She's in Florida. Ha, ha.
I don't have to deal with any of this.
Congratulations.
You know what's so funny? When they landed in Florida, my sister goes, it's so hot. I'm like, you moved to Florida.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
I like the heat.
Yeah, Mom likes the heat. Mom's party going.
It's 85 degrees right now.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's not even 10
o'clock
yet.
Wait.
Yeah.
It's 84 right now?
It's 84. Yeah.
Right now.
85.
85 right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
Right now.
9, almost 25 in the morning?
It was yesterday was 95. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
95.
Sign me up.
I like the heat.
All right, yeah, let us know in August if you still like it.
Well, they're getting a pool put in pretty soon.
I let you know in the snow. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thanks, Ma.
That's true. We'll be
yep.
We'll be wishing we were there.
Exactly,
the
right. She'll be saying, come on into Florida. Come on.
I lived in Dallas, and you go from one air conditioner to another. So you go from your house to your car, into your office building, and then back into the car, into
yeah.
the... You're just running from air conditioner to air conditioner.
I don't like air conditioner. I want to be a slave. I don't like air conditioning.
Yeah, Mom likes really? Mom likes to lay out in the sun like a snake.
Yeah.
Oh, I do that, too.
I come from Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico was very hot.
That's yep, exactly.
So
right.
I'm used to the heat.
How old were you when you left Puerto Rico?
I was 30 years old.
13.
Yeah, that was also the first time you flew on a plane, right?
30, yeah.
Yep.
How did you like your plane ride?
Oh, it's beautiful. We flew a Frontier Airline.
Yeah.
And I say airplane, you got your room for you.
Did you say Frumpy beautiful. Airline?
Frontier.
Oh.
Frontier.
Right.
Airline.
And Mom had a window seat. But Mom, what'd you do?
I didn't open the window. I don't want to see.
You don't open the window. You mean the shade, Mom. You open the window, get sucked out.
Mom, oh, that's window. Cute.
Where did he go? The pot has gone everywhere.
It was a nice flight.
Right.
Was it stressful? With everything going on?
Very roomy plane. Very nice.
Yep.
Hmm.
And a little bit of turbulence?
Very little. And it was bad weather, too. And we got here in 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Nice.
We were in Orlando.
Yep.
It's quick. The first thing AJ said when he walked in the studio this morning before we went on the air, AJ walks in and said, "Well, Mom's never going on an airplane again."
Yep. Well, she told me that.
Oh, I had to go back. I had to go back in October with my granddaughter's Swift 16 parties in Long Island. So I have to go.
Oh, wow. You're taking another plane. So look at your mom, jet setter. Look at
you. Wow.
Yep. She's braver than I am.
I go back in the airplane.
Right. All right. This time don't fly it, Mom.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I can't walk there if I have to fly.
This is true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So are you all set up now? Is the house unpacked or where are you with that?
My daughter, beautiful home, brand new home, beautiful.
Right, except no TV right now.
We're waiting for the furniture to arrive here probably a couple of days.
Right. And Mom, what's going on the TV? Mom hasn't watched Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
What happened with Jeopardy?
Yeah.
I don't have no TV yet. Maybe a couple of days.
Ooh.
No Jeopardy, no nothing. I'm watching the walls. Uh-oh.
Yep. It's like being in prison all over again, huh, Mom?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm glad you checked in. We got to keep in touch.
Yeah, Mom.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'll call you tonight.
Care, guys.
I'll call you tonight by 7 o'clock like I always do, Mom.
All right. Love you, Mom.
Love you, Mom.
Okay, honey.
Okay.
Time for Dumbass News.
Okay.
It's time for Chaz and AJ Dumbass News.
Yeah.
Dumbass.
When you see a dumbass in the news, send it to dumbassnews at chazandajinthemorning.com. Police dispatcher helps a woman stop her out-of-control car. How does a car get out of control?
End up behind the wheel?
Out-of-control driver.
A loosened up behind the wheel.
Right.
User error.
Two things. Take your foot off the gas and hit the brake.
Exactly. Pretty simple.
She was driving on an Ohio freeway, could not get her car to slow down, so she called 911. And the dispatcher had to gradually pull the emergency brake, which she did. Here's a clip.
She's all the way over on the right-hand side. She can't get slowed down.
Emma, this is Becky. I need you to listen to me right now, okay?
I'm trying it. I want to.
Okay. All right. Now, I want you to take a hold of your emergency brake and just gradually pull that a little bit and see if it slows you down at all. Emma, does it slow you down at all?
Yeah.
Car in park? Get out. You're okay.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Oh,
I need you to take your foot off the gas pedal, and I need you to lift it upwards. Now, I need you to move your foot over towards the fat pedal that's just to the left of the skinny pedal. Now, I need you to press your foot, not someone else's, gently on that pedal and apply pressure until the vehicle stops.
It's that bad.
Right. Don't slam on it, otherwise you end up on the hood of your car.
I would not be a 911 operator. I would not be very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Need to stop your vehicle? Okay.
That call would be over in 5 seconds.
See that row of trees over there? Aim for it.
Now reach into your purse, take your license, and throw it on the ground.
Right, exactly.
Don't ever get it back.
Find the closest tree, just drive into it.
Exactly.
That'll stop you.
Right.
It will.
You have airbags in that car?
Right.
Okay.
You see that lake going up ahead? I need you to aim for that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Who gave this person the license?
The emergency brake. Well, there's an interesting concept.
Yep, it's an emergency and it's a brake.
It's a brake. Like, you couldn't name this thing better. Two words. It tells you everything you need to know.
The word emergency begins.
Emergency brake. Huh, when should I use that?
Exactly.
And what is it exactly?
Right. Like, there's a thing called toilet paper. Use that.
That's true.
All right.
Is that a newspaper I read on the toilet?